Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches.
Our last speaker is one of our most distinguished novelists. Tracy Chevalier has written 11 novels, all of you will have read or seen the film of her marvellous book, Girl with a Pearl Earring, translated into 38 languages. 38 languages sold over 5 million copies, and her new book, set in Venice, is The Glassmaker. Ladies and gentlemen, Tracy Chevalier.
Thank you so much to Anne and to Sinclair for really riveting 10-minute talks. It's hard to say very much in 10 minutes, and it's hard to follow their act. And I'm not going to try, in a way, because I'm a novelist. And Anne and I were talking about this earlier, that novels, it's a different way of talking about a novel to a public than it is nonfiction. So what I'm going to do, and crammed into 10 minutes, is tell you a little bit about how I came up with the idea for this book, a little bit about what the book is about, and then I'm going to read 2 pages at the very end so you can get a flavor of it. The way I came up with the idea for this book actually involves you. It involves readers. I get readers coming up to me quite a lot asking me, suggesting what I should write about next. And I am always polite. But I usually just nod along, and then I say, because often it's an idea that's really passionate. Somebody's very passionate about what they think I should write about. And I usually say at the end, I think this is your book to write, not my book. But in 2010, I was giving a talk in Milan about Remarkable Creatures, which is a novel I wrote about Marianne, the fossil hunter. And at the end of the talk, a man came up to me and said, I think you should write about Venetian glass trade beads, because they have really interesting stories attached to them. They were used all over the world in trade, and women made them at their kitchen tables on Murano off of the island of Venice. Here's some books about them. And he handed me a couple of books that he had written about them, and I was very polite and took the books, and I looked at them later, and I put them on my shelf, my bookshelf, and sort of forgot about them for years. And then many years later, I had just was working on a novel set at Winchester Cathedral. So I was going to Winchester a lot, and my husband John came with me on one of my research trips, which he doesn't do very often. Now, he's English, he should know better. Is there anybody here who's from Winchester who I'm about to insult? Yes, don't mind. I love Winchester, but my husband said at the end of the trip, do you think you could set a book someplace we actually want to go to more than once? And I said, I love Winchester, what are you talking about? But then I said, how about Venice? And he said, that will do nicely. Now, we've had a long and happy relationship with Venice. I'm wearing earrings that we bought on our honeymoon to Venice 31 years ago. And they were made on Murano. We visited Murano. Little did I know I was going to set a book there many years later. But when I had an idea that I wanted to write my next novel and I wanted to set it in Venice, I thought, what's my angle going to be? Because there are literally thousands of books about Venice or set in Venice. How was I going to do it differently? And then I remembered those 2 books on my shelf about Venetian glass trade beads. And I got them down and I read them and I thought, yes, this is my subject. So The Glassmaker is about a glassmaking family on the island of Murano, which is about a 15-minute boat ride off of Venice. Glass has been made in Venice for 1,000 years, but in 1291, the Doge of Venice had the glassmakers all move from Venice to this little island of Murano in order to control the fires that kept breaking out in their furnaces. He didn't want this beautiful city of Venice to burn down. He didn't mind so much if Murano burned down. But he also wanted the glassmakers to be on Murano because glassmaking in Murano was considered the best glassware in the world at the time, and still is often. And he thought, if we can have them all in one small place, we can keep an eye on them so they don't go anywhere and take their trade secrets and their techniques and go to the mainland, to continental Europe, and set up competition, because Venice is making a lot of money off of glass and they wanted to keep it that way. So they said, okay, you move to Murano. If you leave and go to the mainland, we're going to come after you and kill you. And that has been a threat that has kept them there to this day. Of course, now they can move around more, but it was a very effective threat. So I set the glassmaker mainly on Murano with forays into Venice. And it's about a glassmaking family called the Rossos, who I made up. There are real people throughout the book. There's Josephine Bonaparte makes an appearance, Casanova makes an appearance, as does Maria Brovier, who glassmaking was a male profession. Women were not expected to be a part of it. But there was one exception to the rule, and that was a woman named Maria Brovier, who in the 15th century, late 15th century, invented, she worked in her father's curing furnace, and she invented a bead called the Rosetta, a red, white, and blue, very carefully complicated bead that became very popular and very valuable, particularly in Africa. And the Doge of Venice was so pleased with her that he said to her, you can have your own furnace. And she was the only woman who did. So when I first did the research, I thought, oh, I think I want to write about her. But then I thought, no, I want this book to be about... Maria died in 1511, and I want this book to go all the way up to the 21st century. Why? Because I always thought of Venice as a crumbling place where tourists go, which is the way we think of it now. But it was a wealthy center of trade in the 15th century, and those are the buildings that we see primarily now, built that way. And how did it go from that all the way to the 21st century, which is a tourist destination? How many of you here have been to Venice? Yes, almost everyone. How did that happen? Well, there were a lot of reasons, and I wanted to explore them all through the prism of glass and how glass had its own ups and downs. So I started doing research, and I thought I wanted to cover 500 years of her history. But I had a little problem, because I also wanted to follow one family and one woman, Ursula Rosso, the heroine of the book, who wants to work in glass and is not allowed to. I wanted her to spend several hundred years learning how to make glass. How do you do that? Because I didn't want her to die, all of her family to die, and you having to care about all of her descendants. But how do I solve that issue? Well, one night I was lying in bed in Venice. Maybe it was the magic of Venice overtook me, and I thought, ah, they just won't die. They're just going to skip across time. The mainland will have normal time, but Venice is a magical place. It's a disorienting place. It's a timeless place. So let's all be a stone skipping across the water. We and the characters touch down. It's 15th century. The end of the chapter, we touch down again, and it's 100 years later. They've only aged a year or two. So at the beginning of the book, Ursula is 9 years old in 1486. In 2022, she's in her late 60s. She doesn't care about time passing. She cares about making glass. So that is the unusual structure of the book. It's not unheard of. Virginia Woolf did it with Orlando. Most people just remember that Orlando turned from male to female, but Orlando was also set over 400 years, from Elizabeth I to the early 20th century. It's not impossible. It sounds a little crazy, but don't worry. It isn't. It's not magic realism. It's definitely a Tracy novel grounded in everyday life and how to make glass. But it happens to skip across time so that you get the great sweep of Venice. Now, I want to finish by reading a short scene. I've mentioned the woman Maria Brovier. It's not too spoiler to say that early in the book, when Ursula is 16, there's a family tragedy, and she learns, she wants to try to help her family's finances. She goes to Maria Barovia and says, what can I do? And Maria says, make beads. They're inconsequential. They aren't going to be in competition with the men, so the men won't even notice you're doing it, but you can bring in a bit of money that way. My cousin will teach you. So she goes to the cousin. Cousin is teaching her. Ursula is working and trying to learn how to make beads well. And then her mother has a baby, and she suddenly has to stop working. And this is one day she runs into Maria Brevier. And there's a little hint in here of what's going to happen over hundreds of years' time. One afternoon, Ursula was bringing Stella back from the wet nurse and took the long way around so that she could walk along Murano's Grand Canal. It was quiet compared to the Venetian Grand Canal she'd had a brief taste of. The baby was in a post-feed daze, and Ursula was in no hurry to get back to the stinking laundry and grubby house. She paused by the water, ever moving, glistening in the autumn sun, and took out a bead she'd made and now carried in her pocket. It was a translucent green, like the canal where you couldn't see the bottom. She held it up to compare its color to the water. Admiring your own work, are you, Ursula Rosso? Maria Barovier had come to stand beside her. Ursula dropped her hand, embarrassed. I haven't had a chance to make much. The bead maker nodded at Stella, asleep on her sister's shoulder. They take up all your time, don't they? Show me. She held out her hand. Ursula reluctantly dropped the green bead into her palm and held her breath as the older woman inspected it. Not yet, she said, handing it back. The shape and color are good together, but the symmetry is not quite there. Glass is so hard to control. That's what I like about it. It's an unpredictable mistress. It has its own laws. But you have to practice more before you show your beads to Signor Klingenberg. The merchant needs to have no reason to turn you down. There are no women in the glass business, because our work must be perfect to be accepted by men. With glass, there's no such thing as perfection. You are in the business, though. I'm an anomaly, the exception to the rule. I suspect it will take a very long time for women to be accepted into the glass world. Hundreds of years, she gazed at her protege. Are you sure you want to spend your whole life knocking on the door to that workshop? Maybe. Imagine yourself in the future, then, trying to make a living, making beads for gentlemen, for countesses, and even empresses. Imagine they reject you because of a whim, changing tastes, wars and plagues and poverty, things outside of your control. Can you imagine all that and still do lamp work? Ursula looked out across the shifting, glittering water, contemplating the shifting, glittering, unpredictable path ahead of her. Yes, she replied, I can. Because already she was as attached to her bead lamp as if it were a child. Maria nodded. Take this then, a gift, to keep you going. She reached in her pocket, pulled out a bright new rosetta, and handed it to Ursula, then turned away without even a goodbye. Ursula studied the bead, beveled so its layers of red, white, and blue glass shone through in a scalloped pattern, and smiled. Grazie, Signora Maria, she called after the bead maker. Maria Barovier waved a hand in the air without looking back. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radio Aldi, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldi magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldi.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldi.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.